straight off the top, a man with one of the best resumes in football. I just had to look it up again to refresh my memory. 4 premierships, 3 as a captain, 2 Norm Smith, 3 All-Australians. He was the All-Australian captain. He won a couple of best and fairest. Unbelievable stuff. Luke Hodges with me. Hodgie, thanks for your time.
Good morning, Kane. I hear you're the person who got that rule changed. Is that, is that correct?
I'm claiming it. Are you happy about it?
I am. We at Channel 7, we had a couple of meetings with the umpires over the last couple of weeks, and they agreed that the look of, I think it was the Sinclair one, which as soon as your player, and it's smart. Like when we were playing, we used to do the same thing.
Yes.
We used to try and take him in there just to try and get any kind of 50 you could, to make obviously your opponent frustrated and anything where you can sort of trick the umpire. But I agree that players were doing it more and more because they could find out how dangerous of 50 is in today's game, how fast they move the ball. So, look, the umpire said it wasn't a great look. They were looking into it. And to their credit, they put their hand up and said, look, this isn't a great look for our game and we need to change it. And I think that's where the umpires, the AFL, have come a long way saying that, look, things haven't been worked out because, you know, all players and coaches try and bend the rules to suit them. They put their hand up and say, look, let's tweak it this way, which I think everyone's happy about. You don't want to see a 50-meter like that, especially when the player on the same team is trying to interfere.
Yeah. So take me through that. Take me how often as a crew at Channel 7 you meet with the umpires and what can you give us some detail into, you know, what you discuss?
No, it was more just a chat. I think they do it a fair bit just to try and catch up because there's a lot of times where a decision's been made and you're unsure, but then if you can stay in touch with them and understand where they're coming from, what they're looking for, you can sort of be a bit more calculated in what you say. So it was more of just a catch-up where a couple topics were discussed. And that was sort of one there that we'd raised it because it was just after that Sinclair 50. And look, what we didn't understand is how hard it is for the umpire. And they get really good. Every decision they make or don't make gets questioned. Where if as a player, I'd be like, you'd be scared to make any decisions as a player. You're looking through a lot of the numbers and they're making 85% correct decisions on all the ratings that they get and all the decisions that they make. So it gave us a good understanding of how hard the game is, what they're trying to do. They work harder than the players out there. So once you sort of sit back and understand what they have to go through, you can understand why there is the odd mistake. But given the benefit of the doubt, they came up and they made the right decision with this rule, I think.
Yeah, so my criticism was never really levelled at the umpires. It was more made it too hard for them. Like, the stand rule, you need a couple of sets of eyes to work out as a player played on, as he moved. You know, you've got to watch both things at the same time. And this is similar with the protected zone. So hopefully this adjustment gives them a bit more leeway to have a bit of feel for it as well. Like if someone and their man's in there, they have a bit more license to get out and the umpires aren't as quick to blow their whistle. Are you conscious? I've always wondered this. Are you conscious on prime time centre stage, Channel 7, Friday night footy, not to be overly critical of the umpires, or will you still call it as you see it?
No, I don't think it's like what you said. It's not critical of the umpires. It's sometimes, look, the umpires want it black and white. They just want a simple decision on yes or no, and I think that's what the AFL have made it. Sometimes we're critical of the changes. I think the dissent rule, which once again the AFL have softened because of they've listened to the footy public, they've listened to the supporters at home, and they've softened and they've come to a pretty good spot, I reckon, where any disrespect towards an umpire is going to be 50, but you can argue and you can put your arms out, as I'm doing while I'm talking to you right now, because some people just use their hands while they talk.
Natural.
I feel once you're there, you want to understand where the umpire is coming from, because they're, as I said before, they're working just as hard as the players. They're trying to get out of the road of blokes that are twice the size of them and not getting hit and trying to make a split-second decision as well. So you always got to try and see the umpire's point of view, but sometimes the passion of the game, you might get a little bit worked up in one of the calls, but I think everyone does it at times.
Tom Stewart handed a 4-week suspension. Hodgie, what did you make of it? Correct call?
Yeah, he couldn't have done 3 there. People sort of saying, oh, they asked for 3. There's no way. It was a 4 or 5 week. I hate the people that are going hard at Tom saying, oh, that's a dog act. He should have got more. What was he doing? Like, that was a split second decision. And you know, you've been in the position where so many times and you've got blokes flying. This game goes that fast. People are that big. he made an error. And you could sort of see his face afterwards, talking to a lot of the Geelong people, hear what they're saying, how much that affected him. It's not in his nature. It's not the kind of person he is. But in saying that, he put his hand up. He did the wrong thing. He didn't make any excuses for what he did. And he's going to have to sit back and watch his teammates. And look, how tough this season is. It's going to be a tough 4 weeks for him sitting back watching. Just with you lose a couple of games, you look at the Lions, they've gone from first to third, and if they lose on the weekend, they could pop down to six all in the space of 2 weeks.
Yeah, North Melbourne, Melbourne, Carlton and Port Adelaide games that he will miss. Some don't have as much sympathy as you, and sort of discussed this yesterday, and David King was strong with this on Jared, saying, look, these players, they really make an error, really, when they've got the footy in their hands or how athletically gifted they are. So to say that it was a split-second mistake in the moment is giving them a get-out. But you think there's still errors that occur by these elite professional athletes that, you know, move their body in pretty significant and impressive ways. You still think there's an out for Tom Stewart on this one?
There's no out because he put his hand up. He made a mistake. Everyone's allowed to make mistakes. He opted to bump when he shouldn't have went past the ball. If he had got four or five, we'd have sat back and gone, yep, no problems at all. He put his hand up. He didn't even argue a defence for himself because he knew he was in the wrong. But for people to sit back and say that, oh, they hardly make a mistake. Players make so many mistakes out in the ground. Like we talk about umpires making mistakes. Umpires make 8 out of 10 correct. If I was a player and I was making 8 out of 10 correct, you'd be the best player in the world. It doesn't happen. With 44 players out there running around, you got 36 on the ground. How fast the ball movement, you've got so much going on. Yes, players are allowed to make mistakes. If you're not making mistakes, you're not having a crack. So I find it's a bit harsh that people go out there and say, oh, he knew what he was doing. No, he didn't. I said he opted to bump. He made the wrong decision then and got him high. Didn't mean to get him high. Got him high and he's copped the punishment from it. But I still feel that how fast that game is and how quick you got to make decisions, mate. I've been there. I've done the wrong thing. So I can't sit back and say, no, you got to throw him to the wolves. He made a mistake. Everyone does it. And anyone who says that they don't are lying to himself.
What was the longest you were suspended for ever?
3 weeks.
And what was that for?
Swallow. Right. Grabbed me from behind on a roll, turned around, and I got him in the chin. And once again, I had no defence. I did the wrong thing. I put my hand up. And as I said, you're out there, you make a decision. And as soon as you do it and it's the wrong decision, you know. You don't need people abusing you or people having a shot at Tommy Stewart. He's a good fella. He made a mistake. And that's where I know everyone's sitting back and we forget about Dion Prestia. Look, you don't want to see his family. And that's to understand why you could go the 4 or 5 weeks because of what he's been through. He missed out on the rest of that game. He misses out on this game coming up. So, yes, you definitely feel for Dion and hopefully he has no long-lasting effects from the incident.
You followed the Lions pretty closely, Hodgie. That goes without saying. Lachie Neal has extended his deal. That took me by a little bit of surprise. I thought he probably would finish his career back at Fremantle. Take us through your opinion on that, a pretty big signature for the Lions.
It is. I think with all the murmurs that came out last year, I reckon that got a lot of people by surprise with the fact that he had 2 years to go on a contract and was looking to come home. But can you know, you've got family, you've got kids. They had, going through COVID, how a lot of people, especially down south in Melbourne and Sydney, New South Wales, what they went through with more lockdowns than anyone else in Australia. That was tough for so many people. And you look at Lachie and Jules, they were over here. They were about to have their first bub. They had no support from family. All their family supports either in Adelaide or WA. And you can understand, being a new-time parent, it is a tough thing to adjust while you're trying to be professional footballers. Jules was still working, and they didn't have much support apart from their friends in and around them. I think what we've noticed over the last 12 months is the Lions listen, the Lions identified that, and they've thrown as much support around. And plus, it also helps that now the borders are open, you can get family members flying over to give them a bit of a chop out and help them out. But I think it sort of showed that he does enjoy his time in Queensland, so signing on to 2026. I guess the other flip side is, have Fremantle cooled the Jets? The fact that they're sitting second on the ladder, they've got a really good mix
strong
of young
infield,
guys that...
Yeah.
They're that strong at the moment that they put Nat Fyfe back through the seconds, and I don't think Fremantle would have done that for the previous 8 years. So I think it's a little bit of two things. Brisbane looking good. Lockie feels comfortable, but also Fremantle are very comfortable in the position that they've got with their list.
Yeah, as you said, 2026. So he's 29, takes him till about 33. I mean, just the fact that players are going to play for longer, aren't they? Would have been unheard of. There was the old Andrew McLeod rule at Adelaide where they would only give him a one-year extension, and I reckon Boomer Harvey, when he was 30, signed about 7 one-year deals. But definitely players playing longer, Hodgie. I mean, how long can someone like Lachie Neale play for? We're seeing what David Mundy and Travis Boak are doing at the moment.
Yeah, I think with how smart they are with their bodies, they don't have to play every week, even though Lachie at the moment. But as you hit that 30 mark, teams realise that you're getting better bang for your buck if they maybe miss a game once every 5 or 6 weeks. But it's also to Lachie to develop a different game. The people who have longevity in the games, the people who can push out to a wing, can play at half forward, can maybe slip across the half back, just so, one, it gives their body a little bit of time, doesn't get crashed and bashed the whole time like Lachie does. Like if for anyone at home, just go and watch him play a game of football. He's always underneath the ruck, when he's always getting hit. People are, anytime they can get an opportunity to tackle him, they drive him into the ground. That can only handle in your body for so long. So it's up to him as well to get the most out of his body for that period of time. He needs to probably start to look at different positions to help him as well.
Are you concerned about Brisbane?
There's a few red flags that you sort of look at. The first one's the continuity that they haven't had up forward. And people are sort of saying, oh, Hipwood looks unfit. But you need that bloke firing in finals if you're going to be any good. So I'll be playing him just to get his fitness up. He's trying his backside off. And, you know, once you're out for 12 months, playing half forward is the hardest position on the ground. Yeah. But the continuity, Danaher, Hipwood and McStay have played 14 games together, and I think they've won 12. Or won 11, and one of those was when Hippy hurt his knee. So when those guys are up and firing, they play well together, they're successful. But on the weekend, they didn't have Zorka, they didn't have Bailey, they didn't have Darcy, Gardner. And Melbourne just showed them a lesson or two. So there's some red flags, but I wouldn't be that concerned, because what we've seen over the last 3 years, if they're playing their best football, they're very hard to beat. And no one wants to be playing their best football now. It's the back end of the season going into finals when you want to be charging.
Luke Hodges with us this morning. You got a question for him, send it through on the temper text, 0433 98 11 16. We'll put a couple of those to Hodgie before he leaves us in a little bit of time. I spoke to Nathan Buckley yesterday about just not necessarily Jordan Ngoi, but when another club is looking at a player, perhaps with a troubled past or a checkered past, whatever term you want to look at it. Now, I'm not saying that was the case at Hawthorn, but you did get a lot of mature players to the club that had a massive impact come finals time. Were you involved as a leadership group, as captain? Were those decisions run past you on how the playing group would feel about, you know, a Brian Lake, a Gibson, whoever it was? Now, once again, I'm not saying those players had any baggage with them, but did those decisions come by you before the club made them at the end of the year?
A lot of them. Well, Clarko was really good, and the footy department were really good at reaching out to the players, because a lot of the players know other guys around the club personally, probably a little bit better than what the coaching staff would. So they would reach out to sort of say, have you heard anything? This is what we're thinking. Mm. Would we get an ultimate say? Probably no, unless we come up with some pretty strong evidence of why we should or shouldn't have it. But we had a lot of discussions. I know when Dale Gartlett came over, he had his issues prior to getting picked up. Clarko did. He came and sort of said, Can we bring this kid in and give him an opportunity? Because we reckon he's got talent, and if we can help him develop as a person off field, then he might be able to help us in the future. We took that risk with him, and he came across, and we could see his potential. He was such a ripping young kid, but got caught up off field again, and ended up going back home. So yes, the clubs do have, they give the senior players a bit of a say, but ultimately it's up to the recruiters in the club whether they think they can fit him in.
So if Jordan Ngoi does leave, it for me, it feels like Geelong is a really good option for him. Do you share that view that the culture of the Cats, the more relaxed life, they seem to, you know, train hard, but when they're away from the group, they're allowed to be away from the group and the leadership of Chris Scott and Joel Selwood? Do you think that would be a good fit? He's also a free agent as well, considering they don't have a lot of draft picks to give up for a player of his calibre.
I find that the more senior team that you have, the the less risk it is bringing a person who has had a few issues similar to what Jordan has over there. Because it's not, if you go into a young team, they're probably looking up to a Jordan Ngoi and saying, how good's him? He's a game changer. Where if you go to a Geelong, Jordan Ngoi is looking up to the Dangerfields, to the Hawkins, to the Joel Selwoods, Jeremy Cameron, these kind of guys. So if you've got a senior list that's highly respected across the AFL, and Geelong, of looking across, have probably got as respected list as out of anyone. I know there's a few other teams out there that, that sort of match them, but that strength in that leadership group that they have, I'd be confident that if Jordan went anywhere, he would fit straight into that. Because if you're going to go to a team like Geelong, and I know Isaac Smith, he's got no issues, but he went up straight to Geelong and he knew that this is what we stand for, this is what we do, and if you're going to be a part of our team, this is how you got to play. And that's coming from Isaac, who has great morals and a really good fella. Yeah. So he knew it was written, it was put down to him straight away. So I'd be confident if he did make that decision and go to Geelong, that that leadership group and the culture there would be a decent fit.
Your old coach, Alistair Clarkson, spoke, I think it was yesterday, on the Believers podcast about the prerequisite for him to return to coaching. Let's have a listen. I'll ask you something on the back of this.
What about this jumper here, Clarko? If the planets aligned and the timing was right, would you consider being part of that, trying to build something from scratch?
Yeah, based on what I just said, yeah. And anything where, as long as there was a group of people, which already just my links with the task force and the government suggest, and the wider football public down there in Tasmania and the general public, is that, wow, we're already on a little bit of a mission of just getting the team. You know, our piece of silverware is getting the license right at the moment. Yep. And that's what's exciting. It's just like, well, I don't think this is going to take 10 years. I think this could be done by July or August of this year. It's just like, wow, let's jump on board. How can I help? So that's my and Tasmania's piece of silverware at the moment. But once the license was to be granted, if it is in July or August, then that piece of silverware very, very quickly turns into, okay, now it's real silverware in this AFL competition against 18 other clubs. Could I get excited about participating in that journey? Absolutely. Whether that's at administrative level or coaching level, it wouldn't be playing level anymore, unfortunately. but if it could be playing level, I'd be jumping on board too. My only prerequisite is I want to be involved with a group that's got an opportunity to win it again. So whether that you're taking a group that's a long way from it and it's now a five-year journey, or whether you take hold of a team that's close to it, and the goal of the game is to, and especially with the way that Karen and I have gone about it over the journey, is bring together a group of people which involves administration, coaching and players, and a journey together, a voyage together, where you've got this shared goal at the end, which is to win silverware.
That was
that's
the one.
Just like Clark, that's just like Clarko to get one question and talk for 7 minutes about it.
So that was the second bit of audio that I wanted to put to you there. That about winning. Like, could now there's talk about North Melbourne, and he hasn't denied that. He said, no, within the space of a 4-year period, he feels like he could turn any club around, but listening to him speak, it feels like a GWS, an Essendon, or someone who is a bit closer than perhaps a North Melbourne or a Tasmania. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he does have. He's passionate about Tassie, and he wants to see Tasmania get a license, just with the connection that he's had down there with Hawthorn. But what I do know about Clarko is, and what he said numerous amounts of time, is he's coming back to coach a premiership, and new clubs, whether it's been merged clubs or new clubs coming into the AFL, that isn't happening quickly. They're not going to come straight out and win a flag straight away. It takes time, and what Port's probably been the most successful one, where they've come, what, how many years did that take them? 7?
How long years did 97, 2004, so yeah.
So that's probably the fastest one that's came in and won a flag from that. So Tasmania, as much as he loves and wants them to get him up there, I can't see him going down to coach because of the how long it's going to take him to get back up the top. You're right. He said it the whole time, if he comes back into coaching, it's not to develop a team from scratch, it's to win a premiership. He's there to win premierships. He's a competitive beast, and he's sitting back right now identifying every list. Whether he's a chance of coaching him or not, he'll be looking at every list and who's available. Because when he's ready to strike, he'll come out swinging and want to fast track that team as quick as he possibly can to get back up the top. So I think you're right. He's probably more of a stable team. North Melbourne have got so many issues going on off field, which I think that will wipe his name away. He saw the stable side of Hawthorn. He saw the unstable side of Hawthorn, and I can tell you what he liked more out of those two. So with the issues going on behind the scenes at North, I can't see him going anywhere near there, even though he did play for the team and still loves him.
Luke Hodges with us. Plenty more with him on the other side of this. I want to ask him about Luke Parker. It's his 250th this week. They play against Essendon, and we all remember what happened last time. What would Hodgie do if he was the Bombers up against Luke Parker? This week, you're listening to Waitley Cancorns in the Chair. We'll be back after this. A couple of quick ones for Hodgie off the temper text, 0433 98 11 16. Aaron asks, question for you, Luke. I'm hearing ex-players everywhere say the Blues can't win the whole thing because they have no finals experience. Is this, in your opinion, a requirement?
It helps having experience for big occasions. That's there's no doubt, because a lot of people do get flustered. Once you've been there a couple of times, you know what to expect. I guess the biggest fear for teams that haven't played in big finals is the fear of unknown. You don't know what to expect, how the crowd is, the pressure. If you make a mistake, do you go into your shell, don't you? But in saying that, Carlton have got a reasonably experienced team these days, and they do get an opportunity to play in big games. Round one's always a pact. Whenever they've got some big games against some big rivals where they get a lot of numbers in those stadiums. So it's just whether they can handle the occasion, because I think we've seen that some of their football they're playing is pretty impressive. The forward line is exciting. Their midfield is it's not just stop Cripps and you finish them in the midfield anymore. They've just got such a wide spread. So yeah. It does help. But, yeah, Carlton have had a few experiences of playing in some big games as well.
Righto, Hodgie. Sydney take on Essendon. It is Luke Parker's 250th. We all remember what happened in round 9 at the SCG where he mocked Dylan Shiel. They're going no good. We know that. Their pressure has been really poor, worst in the comp. In fact, worst, I think, on record since 2010 for them. AFL is reporting that. And they need something to get them going. Footballers have long memories. What should they have in store, if anything, for Luke Parker this weekend?
Oh, look, he's hoping that he comes out. It's a 250. It's a nice game for him. He gets 30 touches. They have a nice win, and he goes and celebrates with his teammates and his family. Essendon, they've got to make a stand, and this is the perfect time. Sometimes when you're having a bad season, a disappointing season, and you let a few people down internally and externally, like Essendon have this year, you're just looking for something to jump on. This is the perfect thing. This bloke had a crack at your teammates. This bloke had a crack and was calling him as if he ducked his head and second-guessed and not courageous. That's as big as insult as you can get on a footy field between opposition players. I'd be showing that vision pre-game. I'd be showing in the team meeting on a Thursday. I'd be showing it pre-game. Yeah. I'd be saying, make sure, don't go and do anything silly. Like, in today's game, you can't go and do dumb stuff to get suspended, but making sure that every time you run past him, he knows you're there. Anytime he's getting the ball, you tack him, you bring him to ground, just to show him that we're not ducking our head. Yes, it was one act, everyone does it at some time, but I'll be making sure that it's the toughest game that he's played in his 250th. Make sure that he notices that next time they play Essendon, they're not going to get walked over, and if he ever disrespects a teammate like that again, we're going to go at him.
So you've been involved in big rivalries, you know, yourself against Essendon and the Geelong games and all the finals that you've played in. Did you use stuff like that? Sounds like you did.
100%.
Like you've, yeah, so you've used articles and you've put them up around the change rooms and showed vision before?
Motivation. The biggest thing you can get from a footballer, what I've found along, is passion. You bring out the passion. You hit them personally, so they second guess, or you have a go against their courage, or have a go against them as a person. And then previous history. And that's the biggest thing that I've found. So a good example of going into 2014 grand final against Sydney. Sydney atop the table were favourites to win that day. The day before, Clarko's speech was all about what they did to us in 2012. Remember back to that day. How did you feel? How embarrassed were you? You had your family there. What was it like after the game? Watching them sing the song. And then to finish with, your mate's gone up there. 2 years ago, you played a loser grand final with Bud. Now he's trying to take that premiership medal off you, just like Sydney did 2 years ago. You don't reckon we'll fight up, we're walking out of that meeting? It's amazing if you can hit the personal side of things. And this is a coach saying it to you. So if there had been an all-in brawl, you would have known why. It would have been Clarko's fault. But this was a coach understanding his players, knowing that if you hit them where it hurts, right at the heart, right the personal, emotional side of them, they'll do anything when they need to. And that's how you can get the best out of them. So if I was Ben Rutten, I'd be showing that this week. I'd be showing to them saying, if you're going to make a stand, this is the perfect time. And don't go and fight. Don't go and do anything dirty. But go and stand up for yourself. Show your supporters that you do have some grit. You do have a bit of courage. And you're not going to back down against this side and a bloke who did that to you earlier this year.
I love it. I've got goosebumps listening to it. Magnificent insight. And then I guess I so vividly remember that 2014 grand final because you just got over us in the prelim. So you're sitting at home with football depression just watching it. But for you to execute it fairly, you're right. It could have gone over the top and it could have been all in brawls, but the roughhead Hanbury tackle and the aggression that you showed. So it was a credit to your group to able to take that motivation, those instructions, and then execute it fairly. And they were so rattled in the first 5 minutes of that game. Hey, before I let you go, Hodgie, who's going to be the best player in the competition in 3 years' time? Now, we're not going to hold you to this. It's just a gut feel. Who do you think is tracking on that trajectory?
Look, I can understand what you're saying about Rosie the other day and how you explained it. At some point, he might be the most dangerous. It might be for a six-week patch. It might be for a 10-week patch. I might be a little bit biased being up here, and I've watched this kid from his second year. Hugh McCluggage is someone who hasn't been awarded all the strains, hasn't been anything like that at this stage. But how I've seen his development, how I've seen his work rate, what I've seen him be able to do and mature as a person, as a nice guy, but just that will, just to continue to push. He's someone who I think can turn. If he can kick straight at goal, he could be anything. But he's someone who I've kept an eye on since his second year and just love the way he's developed. So Huey, once he gets to his 26, 27, 28, when he puts on a bit of weight and has a bit more calmness around the stoppage, I reckon he's got a massive, massive future to be one of the best in the league.
Hugh McCluggage says Hodgie has that potential. I'll ask you about that a little bit later on. Outstanding, mate. Appreciate your time as always.
Thanks, Gane. Have a good morning.
Luke Hodge with us, plenty to dissect on the back of that. Right now, it is time for a McCafe catch-up. You can try the best ever McCafe blend, coffee fit for an Aussie. The Australian cricketing legend is Adam Gilchrist. He joins me. Gilly, thanks for your time.
Yeah, Kane. Yeah, good to chat, mate.
We'll get to the cricket because there's plenty happening there in a moment. Can I ask you a broader question? Nick Kyrgios is sort of dominating the conversation this morning, his antics overnight with his first round win, spitting in the direction of a spectator, Gilly, and more sort of abuse towards Lions people and officials. I can't cop it, Gilly. Have you got a more sympathetic view on Nick or not?
Every time he steps on the court, it seems we have these conversations, whether it's at the water cooler or in the lift or somewhere on a phone call on a radio interview, isn't it? I watched that game last night. I watched it right through in the end. And I was with one of my sons just in the sort of preceding couple of games before it culminated and finished. I said, geez, that bloke sitting front row behind Nick there, I reckon he's given him a gobful, and I reckon he could blow here. But he sort of, it was only at the end, where he turned and the camera angle didn't fully show the true direction. But, well, you knew the direction where he spat, didn't you, and the intent and the statement it was saying. Now, not a good look. That it's a shame that, I'm more and more over the journey enjoying and getting caught up in watching Nick Kyrgios because of it's entertainment, it's the industry, and there's so much competition around that. You know, and everything that he and Tanasi did in the Australian Open, it lured me in. It did, and I thought it was, what a way to bring people, new people to the sport, and then they can make their mind up if they stay or not. But it's just those little fine finishing touches where you think he just lets himself down. I've got to say that's not a good look. Spitting in general is a bit of a tough one, isn't it? But if it's in that aggressive, did he speak about it? I've got to say I'm a bit.
They asked him about it, and he admitted that the you're right. Your perception of it is right. The person in the crowd was giving him a hard time, and he did admit to spitting in his direction. So he didn't deny it, and blown up over there overnight. Did you play? I mean, we've all you play sport long enough. You come across incredibly talented people, and from time to time they don't maximise their talent. You know, we're all sort of jealous of the talent and the God-given ability that Nick's got. And you would have played with some cricketers that probably had the talent to do amazing things, but perhaps didn't for whatever reason. Did that come across you much in your career?
Yeah, you see it, particularly, I mean, yeah, the old coulda beans, you hear a lot about a few of them, and some of those tell you about themselves, about how they could have been this. But I guess, and again, like what you say, and I hear what you said yourself, you're not real keen to cop it and you find it hard to watch or whatever. Yeah. But I used to be very much like that. But another comment during the commentary last night, Todd Woodbridge was saying about the Tennis Australia Hall of Fame at Melbourne Park, and there's, you know, the statues and the various acknowledgements to the guys and girls in Australian tennis who have achieved a huge amount and then get elevated up to that Hall of Fame status. And he said that, you know, let's hope that Nick can get his groove over his career, win a few slams, maybe win a Davis Cup and get into that Hall of Fame. And I actually, it was at that point where I thought, I don't think Nick cares about that. I don't think it's important. You know, it doesn't, I wonder why it's so important to the rest of us. And I'm not targeting Todd Woodbridge. I understand the sentiment, but it seems to be more important for everyone else than it is to Nick Kyrgios about what he achieves in his tennis career. He openly admits he doesn't particularly love the game. At times he doesn't like it at all, but he's just good at it. And who knows where the journey goes. Andre Agassi, you know, best sports biography ever written, I reckon. He admits that his first, you know, handful of majors, he did while he hated tennis. And then, fortunately for him, he found a love of the game through, particularly when he linked up with Steffi Graf. After a torrid childhood of just being forced to do it, he fell in love with the game and became an elder statesman, didn't he, after being the brat from Vegas in the, you know, with the mullet hairdo and the bright Reeboks. So who knows where Kyrgios ends up, but it's interesting that it seems externally more people are concerned about it than he is. So it's not a good look to spit in the direction of someone, but it's not much fun, as you know, mate, to be out there plying your trade, doing your work in your office and just copping at close quarters, because that's not like a centre court where they're back a bit. That's court three where they are sitting, you know, a matter of 2 metres away and just nailing you. So tough to keep control of, and I don't think we should expect anything else from Nick Kyrgios other than raw emotion.
The views of Adam Gilchrist this morning. Let's talk some cricket. Gilly, first test starts today at 2:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time. Bit of injury concerns largely around Travis Head and his hammy, but we think he's going to be good to go. How have you seen the boys build up?
It's been as good as they can do, really, by way of a build-up, all the white ball cricket prior and not a lot of red ball cricket. But that's the nature of the beast in the modern cricketing landscape. I think I'm really thrilled that Mitch Swepson's been given the go. The stats aren't great for leg spin bowling. I mean, the stats at Gaul, which is, by the way, one of the most beautiful places to play test cricket. It is just stunning down in the just below the fort down there, the old Dutch fort there in Gaul, right on the edge of the on the sea face. It's a beautiful area that was decimated by the tsunami all those years ago and rebuilt beautifully. So it's a fascinating place to play, but the stats support spin bowling, but not leg spin bowling. It's more about finger spin bowling. But I think, really, to be honest, I think that's probably because Sri Lanka in general, on the back of Murali and then Herath, who was a left-arm orthodox bowler, they haven't had the quality of leg spin bowlers that you know, say, Shane Warne or Stuart McGill or others around the world. So, but I'm thrilled they've gone with Schweppo after blooding him in a very, very tough, hard-working class sort of series in Pakistan on benign wickets. He gets a crack down there to try and, you know, slot in and prove his worth at test level. So that's fantastic. I guess the other big decision, obviously, Travis Head is fit. I think they've said he will play, but they'll sort that out over the next few hours as they lead into the start of the match. And then, the decisions between Stark and Hazelwood, really, because you'll have Cam Green at six who can bowl his quick stuff. And I assume they'll go with Stark. He seems to have got through his preparation okay after a finger injury in the first T20. So I'm still backing Australia. And again, going back to those stats, mate, four tests in Gaul in the last 18 months, spin has picked up 113 wickets and pace just 21.
Wow.
But I don't see other teams having the potency of the Australian quicks as what we've got. And Pat Cummins can do anything on any surface. He truly can. And I think with Mitchell Stark, even though they're saying it won't reverse swing because although the wicket's as dry as a beach, the rest of the square and outfield is lush green grass, so they're trying to nullify that. But that's fair enough. That's fine by the home team. But I still think the quality of our fast bowling, with reverse if it turned up, or with a new ball, with it swinging and taking off the seam, I still think they're going to be a bit of a handful for the Sri Lankan batting.